Yoga bar is a mix of weights, of ballet bar, of yoga stretches, of core exercises, and fun cardio. And I just kind of wanted to mesh everything, all my trainings together to devise this class.
Welcome to the Social Fabric podcast with me, Andrea Splendori, and this week my guest is Caroline Whelan. Caroline is the owner of the Yoga Bar Studio in Kilcool, County Wicklow. The music in this podcast has been shortened for rights reasons. For more episodes and more information, please visit socialfabric.ie. If you enjoyed the episode, please rate, review and subscribe. It would be much appreciated. The title tune is Happy and Shiny by The Roundabouters.
Don't worry about a thing, Caroline, because there's nothing to worry about. I won't ask you anything that you don't know, because there's all going to be questions about you. So if you don't know the answer, we just move on to the next one.
Okay, sounds good.
And if you don't want to talk about anything that I'm asking you, don't. It's just simply, as you probably heard one or two of the podcasts, but as you know, it's about my guests. It's not about me. It's not about trying to corner anybody. It's simply just I'm curious about people, what people do and how they do it and what brings them to do what they do. So that's really all there is to it. Thanks for coming, Caroline Whelan. Thanks a million for accepting to come on the podcast. I'm really looking forward to have a chat with you.
Thank you so much for having me. I absolutely love your podcast. I've listened to so many of them and I love the way you delve into why people do what they do. I just think it's such a fascinating, fascinating thing about life where people get up in the morning and what makes them tick.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And we all do something different and we all do something different for whatever reason. So the beauty is that most of my guests, including you, I know absolutely nothing about them. So I'm going to start from the beginning, if that's okay with you.
Sure. What would you like to know?
Let's go back. Let me see. Where would you like to start? What would like before we get to what you're doing now? Because I want to spend a bit of time on that. But before, where would you like to start? So if you and I walk into a restaurant now, and somebody says, "Who's that with you?" I say, "Hold on, let Caroline introduce herself." Where would you start?
Well, I probably would start by saying I grew up in Greystones, born in the 70s and reared in the 80s. And it was a very different place to the one it is now, much quieter. And I went to all the local schools. So went to St. David's Junior School, which is now non-existent, and then went into Bridget's and St. David's Secondary, and still have friendships from primary and secondary school. But St. David's didn't end up being the right school for me because I got very distracted and I was pretty high-wired, let's put it that way. So my father was very clever. He sat me down one day and he said, "Look, would you like to go on to college? What would you like to do?" And I think because I was the third kid, he might have been a bit more tired with me. And I just said, "Yeah, I wouldn't mind going to college. I have no idea what I wanted to do." And so he said to me, "Look, maybe it'd be an idea to change school." So he kind of put it in my court. And at 17, it was a pretty cool thing to do because I kind of thought, yeah, maybe I should change school. I didn't want to socially, but I knew academically I needed to. So I went to an all-girls school and repeated fifth year and did the last few years. And I ended up doing an okay leaving. And, you know, I'm just not academically. I always say to my friends, I'm not academically clever. And they're all like, "Don't say that." But I'm clever in my own ways, and I've obviously found my path in life, but I found school challenging, and I found I wasn't great at learning. You know, I learned through doing, through experiences rather than focusing on books, let's say. And then I went on to UCD and really didn't have a clue what I wanted to do, and I just did a regular arts degree, had some amazing times in college, but didn't get that experience of living away. So I had some great summers away with friends and made lifelong friends in college. But getting away after college was probably my wild time, let's say. And I was just like edging to get away and start my experiences. I think a lot of the reason I do what I do is from the travel that I've done and the experiences that I had, and just looking for something a little bit different, I guess.
Let me rewind a second. You said we're getting a bit distracted in David's, what was the main distractions for you? Because I'm trying to think back at Greystones. I wasn't here in the 80s, but I've seen photographs and there wasn't much going on in Greystones. So it was fairly quiet town. What was
Yeah.
distracting you?
I don't know. I think I was just a wild card. Anyone who knew me back then, I was just, always just running around, and my attention span wasn't great. And I could say the boys were distracting me. Maybe they were, but we had a lot of boy friends, and we spent a lot of our time in Greystones hanging around the corner just at the end of Hillside Road. We spent a lot of time holding up that fence and slagging each other and having the crack. And we used to sit in the park and just hold up those seats for hours on end. There was really nothing for us. There was nowhere to go. But I learned, like, the friendships I made then are still my steadfast friends. And I also learned about boys, hanging out with fellas, having the crack. I'd say I have a lot of male friends because I kind of was like, I grew up with them. Once I went to the all girls school, the girls were like crazy about boys and talking about boys all the time. And I didn't get that at all. I was like, what's the big deal? So I don't know whether I was distracted by fellas. I think I was just distracted by life. My dad was sick when I was 14. My dad got diagnosed with cancer. And looking back on it now, I probably was reacting to that a lot and kind of acting out and looking for attention and intent on having a lot of fun with my friends, which I did. But it, looking back on it, it wasn't easy. And I think that that was probably my way of coping.
That's interesting. I want to ask you a couple of questions on that because I was having a conversation with my kids the other night about schools and boys' schools and girls' schools and mixed school and so on. But a
Yeah.
couple of things you say there in terms of your attention span wasn't the greatest, and I can relate to that. And in terms of your dad wasn't well, and I'm sorry to hear, but how. What kind of support were you getting in schools? What was it? What do you remember of? Was there much support around your behavior as such at the time?
I think a lot of the teachers found me pretty difficult to deal with. And I think back in those days, there wasn't a huge amount of support like there is now for kids, and kind of navigating through your behavioral issues. It was just like, stop doing what you're doing. Like, I still see secondary school teachers in Greystones, and quietly I look at them and I go, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for not listening to you. But of course, I never go up to them. But no, there was one teacher. There was actually two of my home economics teachers who were both, and I loved home economics. It was the subject that, got me. I was interested in it. And they were really lovely. They knew what was going on at home, and they were both very kind and kind of noticed that there was something up. But besides that, no, not really. The 70s and 80s, and even the 90s, like, it wasn't a time for self-care, was it? Or kind of, I mean, self-care is such a new thing for me and for so many of my friends. And at that time, it certainly, I don't remember there being a huge amount of support. Yeah.
And I know you say you went to an all-girls school when you later on for the last year, but what was the, apart from the boys thing, but what was the main difference for you? What do you remember of that experience? Because going from David's, which is quite, my kids both went to David's and I know it was different times, but yeah, a pretty normal school, I would call it.
Yeah, I think it look, a lot of my friends did really well in David's, but for me, I think it would have done me great to have joined, like, being in the drama or doing singing or, but I was just like, there's no way I'm doing that. Like, you'd just be afraid of what other people would think or anything like that. I remember I was really into ballet, so I did a lot of ballet. Mum sent me to, like, piano and ballet, and I went up to seventh grade in piano. And I remember bringing my ballet slippers into David's on the first year, and I was just petrified that people would find my ballet slippers. And so I gave it up. I just wanted to be like everybody else. But when I went to the girls' school, I'm such a nerd at heart, even though my friends are always slagging me, saying I wanna be cool. I'm a real nerd and I love to like learn things I'm interested in. I love to talk to people. I love people in general. And I found that when I went to the girls' school, I just could be myself. And I was like in the Sound of Music, in the play, and I did dancing and singing, and I just kind of didn't care. So yes, maybe it was the boys when we cut down to it. Maybe I was just afraid of what they think. I don't know. I don't know, but it's a hard one to choose the right school, isn't it? Like as like I have, you know, my first child is in secondary now, and I have a daughter starting in September, and it's such a hard one to know what's the right school for them and how they get on. You know, it's a minefield.
But it's interesting to hear that your dad had the presence of mind of saying, okay, do you think it's time to move on, just to make sure that what you want to do, you know, that which was a really nice question to
Yeah.
ask.
And I do, yeah, and I always remember that, and I always really appreciated that because it made me really think, what do you want to do? And I do really remember him saying to me, do find something that you enjoy and keep doing it. I really remember him saying that. And I wasn't brought up in a house where it was like this was the path that was kind of put ahead of me. Now, maybe again it was because I was the baby, but I very much was like, you know, I knew that he was working in the 80s, he was sitting in traffic. He had, you know, it was really hard going for all of our parents at that time. And I think he wanted us all, you know, I have two older sisters and, you know, they were both very supportive of what we chose. So I kind of took that and went with it. I was like, okay, I'm going to try and find something that I enjoy. And I knew at that time traveling was what I really wanted to do. So my dream job when I was very young was to be a travel presenter, was to be on TV and to travel the world. And something kept holding me back, you know, just, I don't know, like even today now coming on for this, I was feeling nervous, you know, I don't know what it was. I just, every time I kind of went to think about it, I was like, no, but I knew I wanted to travel, you know, I knew I wanted to see some of the world.
I'm just thinking back again, like people listening now to this Greystones. We have all everybody sees Greystones as a something now. You know, the Greystones in 2024 is what I don't know, whatever picture people have in mind. But 1980s, you just mentioned your dad traveling and working, you know, traffic and all of that. Just give us a picture of what you recall, apart from hanging around the corner in Hillside Road. What else was happening in Greystones? I mean, you wanted to travel. Was it something to do with getting out of Greystones? You know, being
Yeah,
away from
I think the
Greystones.
biggest thing for me as a teenager was freedom. You know, I wanted freedom and I desperately wanted to explore the world. We were very lucky that our dad was able and mom was able to take us on some wonderful trips. You know, they took us, we have family in Italy. So we went to Italy for many, many summers and they came to us, our lovely cousins. He took us to Russia. We have family in New York and Canada. So we were really privileged to be able to go. And I think that probably gave me a taster for wanting to get away. But no, I mean, I loved Greystones. You know what the beauty of Greystones is that you, it's because it's, especially then, it was such a small town. People always came back to Greystones. So those friendships that you made, like I have friends since I've been seven, we're still the best of friends. And I think that comes down to as well, always coming back to the town. You know, even if people lived away or, you know, lived in town, they came back to Greystones. So Greystones in that time, you know, it's hard to remember the 70s because I was born in 75, but definitely in the 80s, I remember well knocking about the shopping basket, which is where Boots is now. And there was a great kind of there was a little sewing shop, trying to remember the name of it, where the tapas is. You know, you'd go in and buy, there was knitting things for sale, wool and sewing things. Bells?
Bells.
Yeah, maybe bells. That's it, bells.
That's my wife's family. Yeah,
No way.
there you go.
Whoa.
Yeah,
Old
that's
school.
and
My
I'm sitting
dad
across.
then.
I'm just looking across at it at the moment. Yeah.
Oh, no way. You know, it was quiet. There was like little coffee shops, but nothing like the boutique coffee shops there is now. My dad actually grew up in Greystones. So he grew up from the park, and his grandfather, or his dad, my grandfather, used to swim every single day in the sea. And, you know, now that I'm into sea swimming, it's such a lovely thing to connect with my grandfather over that. It was very different. I mean, it was quiet. It was very much hanging out in each other's houses. there wasn't a huge amount going on, but, you know, we had a beach life and we were hanging out in our garden and going down to the beach and everything was really simple, really, you know?
Was it always sunny? Do you remember it always sunny?
Oh, you know what? I don't, like, I actually say to people, did I swim much? But yeah, I think we were on the beach a lot. Was it sunny a lot? I kind of think it was it?
I don't know. We always seem to remember it to be very sunny, you know, whatever it was, yeah. Whether it rained or not. It was always
I do remember being in our garden. We had a lot of animals growing up. So we always had cats and always had kittens and always, you know, we had rounds of puppies. And I think at one stage we had a goat and rabbits. And, you know, so I do remember a lot of that and the kittens in particular, which was lovely to grow up with that. But it's hard. I do find it hard to focus on particular memories, you know. One very funny memory. Probably shouldn't be sharing this, but it is very funny. I was in my mum's black Mars Minor and we were driving down the road where we live, and I was screaming in the front seat and there were two guys in the back, and it was full of chat and wah, 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 wah. And then suddenly there was silence and I'd fallen out of the front seat. Of course, there were no seatbelts those days. I think I was 7 or 8 and I had little rolls of fat on me, and I was just so relaxed that I just rolled down the hill. And I don't know when mom stopped, but she certainly stopped around the corner, and the two lads in the back seat said it was one of their funniest memories of childhood was me falling out of the car. You know, I mean, to think of it now, to letting your kid fall out of the car, like, it just, you just would never have not have a seatbelt. And it's those memories of, like, my dad, he had these big, he used to do a lot of work in the garden, and, you know, you'd be sitting in the back of his big van, and, or not a van, but he had like a thing on the back of his car, and he'd be collecting all the stuff from the garden. And we did a lot of apple robbing. I remember my sisters like robbing orchards all the time. And it was just like, you were out, you were gone, you were sent out. And like all of us in our childhoods, we didn't come back until God knows what time for dinner. You know, we were just outside all the time. And it was a great place for that, because it was so much open space to kind of just be free and knock about with your friends for hours on end, which was amazing.
Wonderful. Great memories. You gave me three songs. I won't tell the police that you were robbing apples and you were falling out of a car, of a getaway car with your mom.
Did I overshare there? Maybe I did.
it's all good. It's all good. The Maurice Minor sounds great. Tell me something. You give me three songs. Which one will you go first? Which one and why?
So I'll be very honest. It took me a long time to decide on the first song in particular, because songs in your teenage years are just, they mean so much, don't they? They invoke so many memories. But I've chosen Sign Your Name by Terence Trent D'Arby. I know he has a new name now, but because it completely and utterly brings me back to those early years in St. David's, knocking about with my great pals. I also had my first music crush on him. I just thought he was the coolest thing ever. And then I fell in love madly with George Michael. So George Michael isn't on my list, but he would be there because I love him so much. Lenny Kravitz, Eurythmics, Simply Red. But I chose this one because when I listen to it, it just brings me straight back to being in David's and having the crack with all my buddies.
We're moving out of Greystones. You want to be a presenter for a travel show, but that doesn't seem to be happening. Something's holding you back, but you do go traveling. So what is about, what did you learn about traveling? What did you learn about yourself? And tell me a bit more about traveling. Where did you go?
I as soon as I finished college, I did my TEFL training to teach English. I thought it would just be, I'd done a degree in English and I just felt it was a great way of getting to go traveling. And I thought I'd give this teaching thing a try. So I did that in the summer of 96. And I remember having a chat to my sister and I said, you know, I really want to go somewhere in Europe, but I want to try and go somewhere a little bit challenging. You know, I just wanted to kind of, because, you know, we've been to Italy and I think we'd been to France at that stage and they were all fabulous, but I wanted to just go somewhere with a little bit of an edge, somewhere where I could push myself. And she said, oh, I hear that Prague is a very cool city. And this was in 96. And I just went, okay, cool. I just kind of looked into it and found a job teaching in a local school, and I got accommodation with that. And I headed off in September 96 and didn't know anybody, didn't speak the language. They just left, obviously they'd become the Czech Republic. And I just was fascinated by just how different it was going to be. And it was the 90s as well. So it was just such a time of just going, let's go for it. And I think to answer your question, what I kind of learned from that was that I have, you know, I have balls. Like I was like, I'm going to do this and I'm going to go for it. And I didn't really question it. I just went for it. And it was very challenging, but an incredibly fun time as well. I was there for a year and a half. I stayed in a block of apartments called Hotel Doom, D-U-M, and it was in the middle of like high-rise city, you know. It was pretty tough. The first few months were pretty tough, but I slowly started to get used to the Czech way of life. I made great friends with my students, and then people started visiting me. And probably one of the proudest things for me was my mom and dad coming over to visit me, because I had been a bit of a messer up until then, and now I was kind of living independently. And for them, and in particular for my dad, to see me independent and me being able to show him the city and take him to beautiful concerts and go out for lovely dinners and be a little bit of a grown up was an amazing thing. And my sisters came and their partners and some really good friends. So it was a real taste of Europe in the 90s. And I got to like travel and went over to all the kind of corresponding countries around and learned a lot about Czech people and, you know, the difficulty they'd had. And I just absolutely loved it. But I was there for a year and a half and I came home and my dad passed away 8 months later. And so I was living at home at the time, and yeah, I was 23, and it was really difficult, you know, it really was, and it was heartbreaking. We miss him all the time. So I was there. I was probably at home for about a year and a half until I got itchy feet again, and I wanted to set off again. And it perhaps was a little too soon after he died, but I ended up going with my boyfriend at the time and some great friends, and we went to Martha's Vineyard and worked all summer and then went traveling to South America and Central America and just absolutely loved it. But of course, ran out of money in the end, but, you know, had a fabulous time. And so, you know, I was kind of traveling with friends at that time, but I really loved my experience of traveling on my own. And so I definitely came back again after that trip, still unsettled and still not knowing what I wanted to do. And so I ended up living in Dublin for a while and having a ball, working in recruitment, working in the corporate world. And I just knew something was at me, you know. It was just like, as much as I enjoyed it and I was making good money and I was living in a great place with one of my best friends, I just was like, this just, maybe dad's words were kind of sinking in, like, find something you love and keep doing it. And doing that kind of job for me wasn't really what I was looking for. So I saw this ad for the Simon community to do a fundraising thing to help the Simon community in, I thought it was the Sahara Desert. I was telling everyone I was going to the Sahara, but it was the Namib Desert in Namibia. And I fundraised the money. And so you basically fundraise the money and pay for your flight, but you're still getting to go and see this amazing place. And that trip was, I really think, pivotal for me, because I'd never had so much time. All you have to do is walk. The amazing people were there carrying your bags and setting up camp. We were camping in the desert. And I met some gorgeous Irish people and we had lots of great conversations. But I spent a lot of time on my own, kind of walking away, I suppose, what had happened over the years. And I remember very specifically walking out into the desert one night and kind of being on my knees. And I know it sounds really dramatic, but I remember just kind of looking up at this expansive sunset and just thinking, what is going on? Like, what do you want to do? Like, why are you here? You know? And I think losing a parent or anyone in your life when you're young makes you really feel the value of life and how precious it is. And I just felt it, you know, on that trip. I was like, oh my God, I need to really delve into this. So I came home after that trip And I was gone within 4 months. You know, very little planning went into the next trip. I just knew I had to pack my bags and not come home until I knew what I wanted to do. It would have been really good if I'd had a bit more money and a bit more planning, but I'm very like that, Andrea. I listen to my gut, I make a decision, and then I just kind of go for it. So my poor parents, or my poor mom at the time, was like, "Are you sure? Are you sure?" And I was like, "Yeah, I just have to go." So she was very supportive. So wow. I think losing dad was a huge thing on and for all of my family, you know, but like really gaining that insight into life and living it, like really living your life and listening to your gut, because it's so hard. You know, we live in a life where that's really hard to do, but I think I got that gift, I suppose, of learning how precious it is.
When you were describing that moment in the Namib desert, it was very much the Joseph Campbell hero's journey was coming to my mind. You know, off you went to try that transformation that happened to you. And and I know you described the, you know, the desert night, that that part when we realize, a bit like the sea swimming, where you realize how insignificant you are, you know, sometimes, and how small we are, you know, and that sometimes puts it. Manners on ourselves, which is a great way.
And absolutely. And so completely.
Where did you go off then? What was the next you 4 months, and then you said, "That's it, I'm off again." Where did you go this time?
I didn't really think of it this time as I want to see this and this place. I just thought of it as, let's just go and let's see what happens. So I booked a one-way ticket to Japan. I had a friend there studying shiatsu, a beautiful— yeah, do you know shiatsu? Yeah. I had a beautiful Japanese massage therapy, and she was really, really dedicated to it. And she lived in Kyoto, and I got to go there in the spring, which is just the most beautiful time to go, with all the blossom trees, and just fascinated by all the culture. I was there for about 3 weeks, and she was wonderful, and we had a fantastic time. She sent me up to a Buddhist monastery for a few nights because I wanted to try it out. But it wasn't what I expected. I thought that the Buddhist monks were going to be very zen and we'd sit around and it would be very calm. But I really don't like shellfish, to put it mildly. I really hate shellfish. And they were making me eat little octopuses and other things like that. And I really was like, please don't make me eat them. And then we had to do our karma yoga in the gardens, kind of weeding the gardens, which was fine. But then at nighttime, you'd meditate. And I remember not sitting up straight, you know, properly straight. And they'd hit you with a wooden board if you weren't sitting up straight. So I phoned my friend and I said, "Where have you sent me? I need to get out of here." And she just thought it was so funny. And I ran away from this monastery after, like, I might have lasted one night, you know. And we had great fun then back down in Kyoto. And then I said goodbye to her and I headed over to Sydney to see some great old friends. But I wanted to go to Melbourne. I'd heard great things about Melbourne and I wanted to kind of be on my own, you know, funnily enough. I just wanted to be on my own and I wanted to kind of just settle in myself. So I found a really great area of Melbourne called Brunswick Street, and I answered an ad in a paper from three boys who were the gentlest, hippiest fellas you could imagine. And I was lucky to get into their house. And one of the guys was Italian, Emiliano. And he had a huge effect on me. He was a capoeira master, absolutely gorgeous, of course, and into shiatsu. And I could feel myself just wanting to soak up all these natural therapies. You know, from him, I was just like, oh my God, he's so cool. But I was also like, this is amazing stuff, like what he's doing to work with people and help people. Of course, I had a massive crush. So I ended up working just waitressing, and I studied massage therapy. I started my first course in Melbourne at the time. And I think I studied, it was 3 or 4 months course, and I just loved it, you know, and I did it and I got this kind of cert. And then my friend came to visit me, and I just remember it so well. She came and, you know, she'd left me in Dublin kind of totally partying and having the crack. And then, like, we're in Melbourne together and we're drinking green tea with these three fellas. And she's like, "What's happened to you?" But I was just so happy to give everything a bit of a break. And we had great times. We traveled around Australia together. But probably one of the biggest moments for me in the sense of finding yoga and finding my love of natural therapies was going to Byron Bay. I'd heard at that time, this was 2001, it was just a mecca for yoga teachers. And I had been kind of playing around with yoga in the late 90s. You know, my first class was in a community center in Bray, but I really wanted to get into it more. And I wanted to do my massage and just learn from all these other people that were around me and soak it up. So I used to massage on this little grass place beside the beach. And by night we would like, I mean, I was barefoot, tie-dye dresses, drumming on the street, doing yoga every day, swimming in the sea, eating the cleanest food possible, not even having coffees. But I met this incredible man there called Beautiful. And Beautiful was a 70-year-old man, I guess. And he used to walk around the beach. He used to wear a little loincloth and nothing else. Lovely big white beard. And he used to walk around the beach every day telling everybody he met how beautiful they were, how amazing they were, how you were doing a good job, keep it up, well done. Everything out of his mouth was so positive. And I'd never really heard this before, you know, this kind of this sense of somebody being this positive. And we became friends, you know, he used to come over and we used to just have chats and he'd sit down beside me and, you know, we weren't like hanging out all the time. But he had a really big effect on me, and he had a little spiritual church, and he named me Loving as part of his spiritual church. And he was just a sweetheart. But, you know, the days, my days in Byron Bay were just very, very special. And I ended up camping in a hostel and massaging the clients there and really crafting my trade for natural therapies. I couldn't get enough of it. I just was like soaking it all up. But of course, there was a time to leave, you know. All the friends that I'd made were kind of moving on. I was probably there for 4 months or so and running out of money big time, but ended up going over to New Zealand. I'd met a guy in Barcelona and went over to see him and hung out for a few weeks and ended up traveling around the North Island again on my own, happy out, and then down to the South Island and worked for a little while. But kind of the purpose of what I had been seeking had been answered. Do you know, like I was just traveling for the sake of traveling. I remember going into all the hostels and meeting great people and having fun, but I'd almost answered what I was looking for. I was like, there was a light on. I was like, oh yeah, I really want to get into all of this. And I remember being on the phone to my mom and she was like, you know, if you come home, this was like a year and a half later. She's like, if you come home, I'll pay for your massage training in Dublin. Like, will you come home? And my sister had had her first baby and I was desperate to come home and see her and him. And, you know, I missed everybody. And so I was like, okay, deal. And so I got myself to Thailand just about by the skin of my teeth. And my mom came to the rescue and I got home in one piece. And I was like, so I felt so happy that I had, you know, done what I'd set out to do, which was to kind of discover what are you interested in and what makes you tick.
Wonderful. The journey of self-awareness. That's amazing. That's wonderful. And so is the next song Groove in the Heart? Groove is in the Heart, Delight.
Groove is in the Heart. Groove is in the Heart by Delight is the ultimate song for me for getting up and shaking your booty. I cannot control myself when it comes on. It was always the song that played in all the kind of nightclubs I went to with my friends in Greystones and in town. And it's also a song that I wanted to bring in because we play it in my yoga bar classes. Music is a huge part of the classes and it gets us all going and all moving.
We come to Yoga Bar, and I've seen your name, I've seen your website, I've seen your, no, I hadn't seen your website until this morning, a Yoga Bar, and I had to admit, I had no idea what Yoga Bar meant. Then I went to have a look, and I saw the bar, like the ballet bar, and I'm going to ask you a little bit about it. But before I say any of that, I just went to your website, which is lovely. What I love about it, the photographs are excellent. but not because they're great photographs, because it just there's a joy to it. You know, all your photos, you're smiling and laughing, I suppose, and most of them, you had a laughing or smiling. It was just wonderful to see it. And most of the people in the place, and there's some gorgeous pictures of babies laughing and smiling and crawling around the place. So it's great. Now, what is a yoga bar? And how did you get into it? Oh, you mentioned the massage and the yoga and so on, but what is a yoga bar and what is this business?
The yoga bar, well, I suppose if you wouldn't mind, I could maybe just with the massage therapy, just it might make more sense. Like with the massage therapy, I trained in that in Dublin and ended up setting up a business in Ranelagh, and I trained in everything you could imagine, everything from Indian head to hot stone massage to pregnancy massage to reflexology, and absolutely loved it all, and had a business for 5 years in Dublin. And as that was going on, I met Simon, my now husband, just come back from New Zealand, and I totally tricked him into thinking I was super cool and super relaxed in my poncho and my little plaits. And he was so supportive, as always has been, of what I do. And I just studied continuously. And I always knew that I kind of wanted to get into groups. And I did talk to him about that. So I started kind of making plans to study yoga. I've been going to classes in Dublin for years and absolutely loved it. And knew that I loved yoga, and I still do. But I also love fun while moving. And I love kind of high energy stuff as well. So in the back of my mind, I knew that I kind of wanted to teach those kind of classes if I could ever get to do it. And so I made a plan then while we were dating and living together to get to India, which was like a lifelong dream to go and study yoga and to become a teacher. A great friend had gone and done the course. It was with Indian teachers. And we got engaged before I went. And I remember him saying, "Are you still going to India?" And I was like, "Oh, yeah, definitely." And it was my biggest dream to get there. I was always a little nervous about going, and I just had the most wonderful time. I did an adventure tour. I studied my yoga training in an ashram, yoga 3 times a day, up at 5 a.m. and meditations. And it was just beautiful. And when I came back, I started studying more and more pregnancy, postnatal stuff and baby massage and all those different classes. But as I was teaching those classes and we started our young family, a girl who's from Wicklow had come into a class and she'd said to me, "Oh, you know, have you ever tried bar?" And I was like, "No." And she could see my mum and baby class was high energy. And she was like, "Oh, you know, maybe you should look into it." And this was, I think, when my third was very small. And I immediately the next week went into town and did a bar class. And absolutely loved it. I had, you know, started teaching pregnancy yoga on my first pregnancy and all those classes, but I kind of went, "Oh, this was another little light bulb moment." And I thought, this is interesting. And so just by pure chance, there was a training in bar. So bar is taken from ballet dancers using small movements, kind of focus movements to strengthen and lengthen the body. And you use a ballet bar for balance. And I tried it, and I just tried a good few classes. I thought, "Oh my God, I love this." And luckily there was a training on Dublin for yoga and Pilates teachers. And I just dived into it, even though we were like living in the middle of Wicklow at the time. And it was like, kids were very small. I just knew this was the next step. And it was one of the best things I ever did. But the training wasn't brilliant. It wasn't long enough. So I spent a year going into Dublin and going to classes and researching and writing down notes. Again, the big nerd in me coming out and devised the yoga bar. And sorry for the long answer, but yoga bar is a mix of weights, of ballet bar, of yoga stretches, of core exercises and fun cardio. And I just kind of wanted to mesh everything, all my trainings together to devise this class. And it has just been an incredible journey. I love working with the women and some men that come through the doors. We've such a laugh, such a connection. I'm so glad that you saw that in the photos, that you could see the fun, because it's very welcoming and it's a real joy to teach these classes, you know. And now I've branched into another class with yoga with weights, and so it's a slower class and my clients are like, "What's going on? You're so mindful and gentle." But I'm absolutely loving that as well. And we have, of course, the studio is in Kilcool, and we have some amazing teachers here teaching everything from Pilates to yoga to kids classes. So it's been some journey. You know, I find that I've been, and I've listened to a lot of your podcasts of people who've said, you know, they push and study, and, you know, we all kind of want a thing in our lives to get to a certain place. And I think I used to have a lot of balls going on, a lot of different things going on. And now I'm just kind of sitting back going, whew, it's a lovely place to kind of feel like I can enjoy it. You know, the studio is doing great. It's, you know, a lovely place to have. And, you know, we got through COVID. COVID was myself and my hubby in our kitchen, like everyone else, really trying our best to get those classes online. And, you know, we all got through it. And I think when you really love what you do and you have a passion for it, you'll keep going. And I think for me, Yoga Bar is just, it's a great, fun, energetic class. And I just love the people that walk through the doors.
It does sound, even the fact that you play Grooves in the Heart in the studio, it does sound like it's a combination, it's a culmination of all of you since, you know, going to Prague and then all the way to India by everywhere else. So it sounds like you managed to bring all that together, and it's wonderful. Yeah, I'm looking at the picture here of three ladies stretching and a bunch of kids. There's about 10 of them lying on the floor, these babies. And it looks amazing. Looks amazing. Does says Simon? Is that your husband's name?
Yes.
Simon, does he do the yoga in your studio?
Good question. No, he doesn't. But he does triathlons. He's a big fan of running, and he does the King of Greystones every year. And so I definitely do a few stretches with him when the triathlon is coming up, and he says that really helps his training. And I would love more men to come. That's why I developed the Strength and Stretch, so that men who are in the gym or women who are in the gym and they're not stretching, this class is really focused on flexibility. And he'd love to come, but with the three kids, we're kind of, you know, I work three evenings a week and a few mornings, and we're ships passing on those evenings. So it is tricky for him to get out. But yeah, I mean, I would love him to come. Would you come to a class?
I love to come to a class. But tell me something before I commit to coming to a class. What is about it? Because I've done yoga for years and I haven't done it for years. I lived in India for about 4 years and I used to do yoga every morning
for
a long time.
Amazing.
Yeah, so ashram, all those things, it's all quite familiar to me. But I haven't done it for a long time. What do you think what would bring more men into yoga? Because I know it's predominantly women, and I don't know the reason why. What would be for you? How would you get more men into your place? What would you need to do, do you think?
I don't know. I have a few male clients and they're brilliant, and they come every week and they love it, and they see great improvements in their flexibility and their joints. I think it's probably men might prefer more men to be there, maybe. So we do have a men's only yoga class starting with a male teacher from India, and he's starting next weekend, the 6th of April. And I'm really hoping that kicks off, because I just think men generally, a lot of men stay fit. You know, they might, you know, run or go to the gym or whatever they do. But I think flexibility is not something that maybe they focus on as much. And I think it is very important as we all get older to kind of work on that. And also, I think just stopping for a little while, taking that little break. I love your 1 hour holiday every day, you know, that you can actually do something that nurtures you. And it isn't, you know, just taking a short break, that you actually do something to stop and take stock of your day.
Yeah.
So
last question, just because I say I will put on everything into the show notes where to find you is yogabar.ie. But I put everything in the show notes and your details in terms of Instagram or whatever else you want me to, LinkedIn or whatever we're using these days.
Thank you so much.
Not at all. But before we get there, what is the today, you know, with the Yoga Bar Studio, which has been going for a good few years at this stage? How many years have you been there?
Yeah. Well, we opened. I got the keys in December 20, right in the middle of COVID. And I didn't open until September 21 and did the online classes. But I've been teaching for 15 years, you know, teaching pregnancy, postnatal yoga bars since 2016. So we've had the studio. It's open for 3 years, 3.5 years.
Nice.
Yeah.
And if you were to, and I know it's difficult, it's like picking the best baby, but what is the one thing that stayed with you out of a testimonial, feedback or something, a moment from any of your clients? What is the one thing that it really stays with you?
Oh,
it kind of gives
so many
you,
things.
Yeah.
I think probably what really gives me a lift is the pregnancy yoga girls, and when they send me their birth stories, and the antenatal workshop with partners and how that has helped them through their labors. It just they come through the door with their little babies. I just had baby massage today, and I'm eternally plucky, and I get to hold the babies, and to see that journey for them is so precious. So that probably is something that just I absolutely adore. And then with the girls and guys who come through the regular classes, they always say to me there's a real sense of community, that they get to know people. We were on the beach in the summers, that they get to kind of, just get away from everyday life. And I think for me, when friendships are formed and people come together like you, I know you love that too. And it's so lovely to be a part of the community and to have those connections with people. Just absolutely love it.
I said it was the last question, but this is the last question because I'm curious. What is a baby massage? How do you do it? Do you do it? You massage all the babies, or do they get to massage their own babies?
No, I wish I could massage all the babies. No, I have a doll and I teach the mums and dads how to massage their babies. And we do everything from helping them how to sleep and help their wind and do little yoga movements. So yeah, super cute. And I've had granddads and grannies come in, and that's just so cute to see that whole kind of flip side. They wouldn't have had it when they were rearing their kids. So yeah, I mean, my baby has just turned 10. I have three kids, and so I'm entering into that whole new era of parenting, as I'm sure you're in. But I love that baby stage. I love them when there's, I just love that, the fun with them. And so that part of the job keeps me feeling very young.
Wonderful. So, Karen, last question is, what made you pick Hit the Road Jack by Ray Charles?
So I wanted to tie in me and Simon. Simon is a great guitar player and singer, and also our dad. So his dad, who I never got to meet, Joe, loved Ray Charles, and my dad, Alan, loved jazz, loved kind of, I get my pipe from him, and the kind of love of a good beat. And me and Simon used to sing this song together when we were dating. He was trying to get me. I'm not the best singer in the world, but he used to get me to try and sing. And this was the song that we used to sing. And I just thought it was a lovely way to finish, just to bring the dads and us together.
Fantastic. Look, it's thanks a million for sharing all of this with me, and it's lovely to hear you talking so nicely about your parents and your dad. Unfortunately passed away, but she obviously left a great legacy, and
Huge, yeah.
and it's brilliant that you're bringing all this to life for that one sentence that he said to you all those years ago. And that's
Yeah,
wonderful. That's
it
wonderful.
is. And
You do
I
what you
think,
love doing.
and find something you love doing. And I think just listen to your gut, and you can't go wrong, really.
Well, absolutely. And I'm sure your clients will seize the benefit of that every day when they come to your studio. So thank you for being my guest, and I will talk to you soon.
Thank you so much, Andrea. Bye.
I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.